There we go. It's on. You're recording.
Okay, great. It is now 8:47. We are going to call this meeting to order on September 28th. Apologize for the late start. As a reminder, please turn off or mute your electronic devices. We've got Mark Harris here with us today from the Attorney General's office. And then is Victoria or Dr. Wright going to do the roll call?
Yes, I will do the roll call. Dr. Byrne? Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James? Mr. Loewy?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
And Dr. Wright is here. We do have quorum.
Okay, great. All right, so we're going to start with the initial investigative reviews, case number 12-2315. Regards to David Julian Diaz. Tracy, would you please read the summary?
Sure. So, case 2315, the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The respondent is David Julian, DVM. At the August 17th, 2022 Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board voted to open investigation regarding concerns of premises staff training with respect to proper sample collection for parvo testing as exhibited in case 2296 regarding Kelly Harrigan, VMD. The case involved the care and treatment of Bojax, a one-year-old male Bichon poodle mix owned by Daisy Ortega. The dog was presented to respondents on February 10th, 2022 due to vomiting and passing bloody diarrhea. Only an oropharyngeal swab was obtained for the parvo test, which revealed a negative result. A rectal swab was not obtained, which is the recommended method of sample collection when testing for parvo. The dog was later presented to an emergency facility and passed away. The dog tested positive for parvo post-mortem. And this was not brought to the investigative committee. I brought it straight to you for your review and consideration.
Okay. Thank you. And we have the pet owner here today, Ms. Daisy Ortega. And then Mr. Stoll, are you monitoring or speaking?
Monitoring over.
Okay, great. Ms. Ortega, did you want to come forward and speak, or are you listening as well? Okay, great, thank you. And the lead on this is Ms. Cross.
Yes. Regarding the case, the original case, 2296, the board is elected to open a case against the responsible veterinarian due to procedures in obtaining the sample for the parvo test. I do know there was discussion regarding collecting like an oral pharyngeal sample and then rectally, even though the tests do recommend a rectal sample. And so I did read the response from the responsible veterinarian, which they outlined how the training program that new team members are onboarded with, and that was not how they were trained to do one step. However, they did address that they've made two changes in this case, that they only obtain a rectal sample at this point to avoid the additional step. And then also they do a skills assessment in the training annually after being onboarded. So where I appreciate that, I think that the responsible veterinarian did recognize that there was an issue. I kind of went two ways on this. Because we opened the case, we did draw attention to it, which I think was important in the case of this patient, to prevent anything in the future, is they've acknowledged it, but there was an issue, so we just issue a letter of concern to memorialize this, even though the veterinarian has memorialized this, because we opened the case. Or, you know, do we dismiss? I see a concern, I don't see a clear violation, because of, you know, processes and procedures have to be determined by the practice. This was not one that was established by the practice to only do one and not the other. So that's where my question is. So I'm going to make a motion for a letter of concern to only train approved or acceptable standards by the company for whose tests or equipment that you're using. So that would be my motion.
Thank you.
Well, can I keep this?
Discussion. Yeah, that's what I was hoping for.
Yeah, that's my concern. I mean, is a letter of concern enough? And that's where I'm kind of at is, honestly, we blatantly didn't follow the recommendations of manufacturer missed the diagnosis. Now, would it have changed the outcome of this case? Hard to say. Part was just so weird. But, I mean, the fact is, we didn't follow established procedures from the manufacturer of the test. We thought our way was better. We missed a diagnosis, and the animal died.
Do you have any more?
Well, it was clear to me in the responsible veterinarian's response that that wasn't even how they trained their team, that they trained them on the two-step approach, and the team member didn't do the second step. And so to prevent the missing the second step, they got rid of that first one, which isn't
written by the manufacturer at all.
And it does show evidence it does work, too.
So,
it is a beneficial swab.
Yeah.
But, yes, it was done wrong.
Right. And so, like, I know whenever we were talking about the case originally, it was like, look, the parvo test may not have been even positive at that time anyways, even if we did both things. We don't know. And, I mean, there's plenty of times I've seen negative test, and then a positive test, you know? So in the recommended treatments weren't different, right? Because we're not curing parvo, we're treating symptomatically. And the symptomatic treatments for that pet's presenting complaints did not change based on a negative or positive test. So like I know like we did address that in the original case for that veterinarian. In this one, a team member didn't do a step. And so I think that is incredibly important. Obviously the veterinarian took this seriously, which I think is incredibly important. So I get, like, if they're like, no, this is our way and our way is better, then it's like, yeah, no, this is not okay. But they address that this way was not better. So that's where at least my recommendation came from.
Yeah, I mean, they addressed it, but ultimately still an animal died. I mean, again, it's hard to say, but we know a test was done incorrectly. Someone's got to be responsible for that. I mean, that's just not a, oh, well, it's not the vet that was actually there on the case. It's not the vet who's responsible for the hospital. It's just a mistake that happened. It just doesn't sit right with me.
Well, I think, I mean, I would agree with the letter of concern. Everything that you stated, I feel is valid. And the parvo test, again, like, they could have been done correctly. We don't know, right?
Yeah.
It could have been done correctly and been negative. And at the end of the day, you're treating the symptoms of the patient. And if the patient was that sick to warrant that level of treatment, whether that parvo test was positive or negative, it still should have received that care.
Correct.
I think to Ms. Frost's point is, you know, they acknowledge that there was an issue. It was a training issue. They've gone back and done it. I'm not sure more than a letter of concern is warranted.
I don't know. It just doesn't sit with me.
Well,
I mean, that's just an animal still died. We still screwed up a test. Someone is still responsible for this. And we're just like, well, we're just going to kind of slap the wrist and nobody's ever going to know
whoever,
about it.
Whoever didn't vaccinate the adult dogs that had the pup,
that is
how parvo will happen.
But that's not
part of it. Can't treat it.
No, yeah. But that's not part of it.
You can only do supportive care and cross your fingers. My experience with parvo, you prevent it with vaccination, or I've never had a good outcome where a dog survived parvo.
I rarely have a death with parvo personally. But so I mean, it's one of those things where it is very subjective. It's that, but still, a test was done wrong. The established procedures for that test that were published and studied for years were not followed, and just a slap on the wrist that no one's ever going to know about. The letter of concern just doesn't seem to be enough to me. Now, this was a case against the vet themselves, or was this against the premise? So this is the premise.
So this is a case we opened. Original
but against
case,
the premise
original
holder, not against a vet. So we're not going against the vet's license. This is not against Dr.
Well, it still is. I mean, it's still
responsible.
Yeah, the responsible veterinarian. It is against their license.
But does that go against the permit, or does that go against the license for the responsible?
The license.
Is this open against the permit or license?
Doesn't sound like it.
Only the vet understands.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it's
the
not premise
doesn't get.
Oh, okay. So this is against the. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But
like neither here nor there, like as far as that's concerned. I think that the biggest thing is that the case told us the information on the decision we made ultimately, right? The original case. We opened up this case because our concern was as to procedures, right? What are their procedures? That's what we were asking. What are their procedures? What is this veterinarian? Does this veterinarian know what's going on in their practice? You know, those types of things. Is this veterinarian engaged with like training and education? Because that could easily be overlooked. And when, so to me, the response was thorough in the sense that, yes, this happened. No, this is not how they were trained. This is exactly how we do it. Which I think in a lot of cases is more than what a lot of practices do. You know, they bring somebody in and, you know, they you sink or swim, right? And figure it out as you go. And you learn willy-nilly from whatever technician told you, whatever information was made up along the way. So this, to me, was very organized. And that's where I'm like, this is great. I'd love to just dismiss it, but we opened the case for a reason because, look, they have all this taken care of. So we can't just dismiss it because something happened. So letter of concern to memorialize, look, this is important.
I mean, does that set us up saying, well, yeah, you screwed up, but you fixed it, so now we're going to just say, okay, this is...
No, because we opened a case to memorialize it.
It ultimately died, and like, says, this is like misinterpreting a test result. I mean, it's not like this was positive and we said it was wrong, but we still did it wrong.
If I can jump in,
he trained them correctly, and it's his decision whether he fires them or not.
Yeah, but it's still an animal died.
Dr. Nosley, what?
Yes, that had nothing to do with how that test was done.
Where they got off on the wrong track is they read somewhere. Well, if we take an oral swab, we can find it quicker.
Yeah.
Okay. So somehow between that and what happened here, we forgot the fecal.
Yeah.
It wasn't that they weren't trying to. It was sloppy.
Exactly.
But then, so then it happened and they corrected it. Mm-hmm. And my concern in these kind of cases is the bigger picture. What's the training like? And there are other instances where they're not doing proper training. And so we can't just, I wouldn't go with just dismissal. But a letter of concern then would address for me that you have to pay attention to training. You did in this case. Let's hope by this letter you're doing that as a general hospital policy. But rising to a violation, I'm not there.
Okay, so we've had a lot of discussion now. Mm-hmm. Unless, does anyone have anything final to add? Okay, so we have a motion and a second to offer a letter of concern. And let's go ahead and do a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Okay. We've got two nays then, so the motion carries. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Okay, so now we are moving on to number 22101, regards to Emma Krakoff, DBM. Tracy, can you read us the summary?
Yes, case 22101. Complainant is Kathy Kane. The respondent is Emma Krakoff, DBM. On February 17, 2022, Belle, a 7-year-old female Yorkshire Terrier, was presented to respondent for front leg plainness and evaluation of two masses. Respondent examined the dog and noted left front leg lameness. Radiographs were recommended as well as cytology of the masses. Complainant approved. One of the masses revealed round cells. Respondent recommended removal and histopathology. Complainant declined. Radiographs revealed mild osteophytes on the left carpal and elbow joints. The dog was discharged with Rimadyl. On March 1st, 2022, the dog was presented to respondent due to no improvement. Blood work and radiographs were performed. Radiographs appeared relatively normal and blood work had mild changes that did not explain the dog's symptoms. Respondent recommended an ultrasound. On March 4th, 2022, complainant called respondent to report that her veterinarian in Nebraska reviewed the radiographs and felt there was spinal compression present. Respondent referred complainant to a specialist for advanced diagnostics. On March 5th, 2022, the dog was presented to Banfield Pet Hospital for a second opinion. The dog was examined and pain at the thoracic spine was noted on palpation. The dog was discharged with pain medication and instructions for a strict cage rest. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, And it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you, Tracy. For this case, we do not have a complainant present. We do have Mr. Stoll
monitoring.
Okay, Mr. Stoll monitoring. And Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this.
Okay, thank you. In this case, reading through the entire record and the narratives, it seems to me that a proper workup was done on this pet, followed a logical pathway. Ultimately, it appears that the pet was suffering from intervertebral disc disease. At the time, the initial exam by the respondent, it was on her list. She did do an examination and, like I said, proceeded with diagnostics. So I didn't find anything there. Communications were proper. There was a minor discrepancy in her records that was explained in the audio with the investigative committee to my satisfaction, and it was very minor. I had a concern about the extreme differences in the narratives between the complainant and the respondent about that initial exam. The complainant said basically she never touched the dog until I pointed out a mass, and then respondent said a complete exam was done, and her records and her examination findings seemed to be appropriate for what you would do if you were doing an exam. She would have had to falsify everything if she didn't touch the dog, and so we are not hearing from the complainant, so I have to discount that. And so the fact that the dog ended up having a back problem, I think she was on the path. There was some diagnostics that were declined, but in all, I think it was a proper workup. So I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss with no violation. Any further discussion?
Okay. Yes, I would add that Dr. Nosley said there's a discrepancy between the two narratives, and you kind of got to pick, well, which one do you believe?
Right.
Well, on the owner's narrative, she left out the second, third visits.
Mm-hmm.
Left that totally out of there. Left out everything she declined.
Right.
Because she declined,
yes,
more than she accepted.
Exactly.
Of the diagnostics. So that's what kind of swayed me. Mm-hmm. And the records, right?
The records, I mean, the exam's in the record proper.
Yeah, so I concur.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I concur also. What concerned me, and I know certainly there are financial limitations and constraints, mm-hmm, often for owners, and now more so than in years past. But still, it confines the veterinarian of their ability to correctly diagnose when they're not allowed to do the diagnostics for any reason.
And I think she was on the right path. I think she would have gotten there.
Yeah.
We went from February 17th to March 5th. Well, that back could have gotten a lot worse.
Yeah.
Between that time period. But by then, the respondent was already dismissed from the case, if you will.
No further discussion. So we have a motion and a second to dismiss. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Case is dismissed. We're moving on to 22-102 in regards to Timothy Chassion, DBM.
Chesson.
Thank you. Please note for the record that Dr. Nosley is recused on this item, and we have no respondent or complainant present. So Tracy, please read the summary.
Yes. So case 22-102 is complainant is Katrina Rios, and the respondent is Timothy Chesson, DVM. On January 25th, 2022, Monarch, a 5-month-old female domestic short-haired cat, was presented to respondent for an exam after adoption. Complainant was concerned that the cat had an upper respiratory infection. The cat was examined and was discharged with lysine. On February 2nd, 2022, due to the cat worsening, complainant brought the cat to Santa Cruz Veterinary Clinic. The cat was examined, treatment was provided, and the cat was discharged with medications. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and recommended and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. So again, no respondent, no complainant. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yes, yeah, so this case, I feel, is another one of those cases where it's communication and perception. You know, if we look at both accounts of the respondent and the complainant, they're kind of markedly different, and it's just kind of trying to put yourself in that place at that time. If I look at a kitten that, if we look at the presenting complaint, the kitten was maybe sneezing or having some issues in that regard, you know, we don't necessarily just throw antibiotics at every sniffling kitten. And I think that's something that's become very commonplace in human medicine, and I think that's the expectation of clients when they do bring in a pet that is having those types of clinical signs. You know, he dispensed the Boralis. I know there was questions as to whether or not it was to be put on the nose, and I can imagine a technician saying, like, if the cat won't eat it, you can just wipe a little bit on the nose to try to get them to start licking it. You know, those are little tips to try to get them to take it. So I don't think that instructed the owner to put it in the nose to help the kitten. And it's not uncommon, like, they can definitely get better from just their own immune system taking care of issues, or they could get worse. And in this case, this kitten got worse and then went to another facility where it was treated because it had more significant clinical signs. And so I don't necessarily see that there was a violation by the original veterinarian. I think it was just happened to be the time of which the presenting issue was given to that doctor. I do have a question though, just for me as a shelter vet, looking at a 2.13 pound kitten at 5 months, just questioning the overall health of that animal in general, that should be about an 8 week or maybe 10 week old kitten weight, not a 5 month old kitten. So I think that was an issue with the kitten underlying, but I would recommend no violation, dismissal with no violation.
Second.
A motion and a second to dismiss case 22-102 with no violation. Any further discussion?
I appreciate what Dr. Thompson said about the antibiotics, because there's many times, at least in the setting I'm in, where people come in and already are demanding antibiotics in a lot of different cases, and the veterinarians spend a significant amount of time educating as to appropriate antibiotic use and antibiotic resistance, and it seems to go in one ear and out the other, that just antibiotics fix everything, and veterinarians' responsibility is to public health. And that is overlooked significantly. It's a huge, huge responsibility that veterinarians have, and even when it comes to domesticated pets in your house. So kudos to the doctor for not jumping to it first, really. And, you know, for at least for Dr. Thompson calling that out, you know, because it's easy, you just throw antibiotics at it, no big deal. But some of the stuff that you're seeing cultured right now is scary coming out of pets, so it's crazy.
Okay, no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Oppose? Okay, motion carries. So case 22-102 is dismissed. Moving on now to case 22-103 in regards to Stephanie Houghton, DBM. No recusals. Okay. Tracy, the summary.
Yes. Case 22-103, the complainant is Elizabeth Leonard, PhD. The respondent is Stephanie Houghton, DBM. On January 3rd, 2022, Keegan, a 5-year-old male Kerry Blue Terrier, was presented to respondent to have a swelling on the right side of the chest evaluated. Complainant noticed the swelling approximately 4 to 5 days earlier. Upon exam, respondent noted several masses and discussed her findings and recommendations with complainant. A fine needle aspirate was performed on the mass in question and submitted for histopathology to rule out mast cell tumor or other neoplasm. The dog was discharged with Entoderm ointment. On January 5th, 2022, cytology revealed the mass was a result of a neutrophilic to pyelogranulomatous inflammation. On January 18th, 2022, sent a photo to respondents associate of a lesion at the biopsy site that appeared to be infected. Antibiotics and an anti-inflammatory were dispensed. On January 20th, 2022, the dog was presented to respondents associate for a recheck. The lesion was noted to be responding well to the medication previously prescribed. The complainant expressed concern that respondent misdiagnosed her dog with a mast cell tumor. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Thank you. Again, we do not have a complainant. We've got Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring.
All right, and Dr. Wright is the lead on this
one. Yeah, thank you. So going through and reading all this, basically we saw mass concern for mast cell tumor, which is a concern basically for almost any mast that you see. You never know. You never know what mast is until you test it anyway. So testing the mast is good. And so this vet did the right thing that way. It revealed a neutrophilic to pyogranulomatous inflammation. So, I mean, we already had something going on there. Yes, we had an infection that occurred, and we had to start antibiotics and everything afterwards, but there was already something happening at that site. We had this purulent or caseous stuff going on. So did we introduce bacteria or source of infection into the mass from the aspiration? It's possible, but that's a risk. I mean, nothing was done wrong that I can see based on that. You can't call that alone. That's just possibly going to happen. Treatment was appropriate after the fact. Everything was done. I mean, the mass came back as not mast cell tumor, so that's good news in my opinion. It's a bummer that we had to start other medications, but if we didn't aspirate it, we might have still been in the same position because there was something going on inside there that was already infectious and gross and the body was trying to clean it up. So based on all this, looking at everything, I don't see anything I'm majorly concerned about unless anybody else has any concerns, but I would make a motion to dismiss this from the violation.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to the state dismiss case 22-103. Any further discussion? I just want to say I had never heard of this kind of dog before. Carrie Blue Terrier. I had to look it up.
It's actually a real one, not Google.
Okay. With no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Case 22-103 is dismissed. Okay, now on to 22-104 in regards to Daniel Moezzi, DVM. Tracy, can you read the summary?
Yes, and just so you know, yesterday Ms. Gordon submitted additional statement and it's on the cloud for your review. So case 22-104, the complainant is Trudy Gordon. The respondent is Daniel R. Moezzi, DVM. On February 18th, 2022, Mac, a 10-year-old male mixed breed dog, was presented to Blue Pearl for a right cervical laceration of unknown origin. The dog also had some abdominal dissection. Upon exam, respondent noted the laceration was infected and had maggot infestation. Blood work revealed elevated liver enzymes and follow-up with an internal medicine specialist was recommended. The dog was sedated for wound care. Necrotic tissue was debrided, the wound was flushed, the maggots were removed, and the laceration was sutured. The dog was discharged later that day. Complainant reported that the dog died 5 days after discharge. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. Again, no complaint, and Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring only, thank you.
Got it easy today, okay. And then I've got Dr. Wright as the lead again.
Yes, thank you. So again, going through this and looking at everything, this was an unfortunate case, but I don't see anything that the vet did incorrectly. I mean, there's maggots in this wound. Maggots can show up very quickly. I mean, they can be fast, but usually the wound is not fresh when they show up. The wound has been there for a little bit of time. The maggots can show up with eggs, I don't know, probably within a day or two, I'd imagine. But that wound is not gonna be hospitable to maggots that quick. So who knows how long stuff was going on for, who knows what exactly is happening, but I don't see anything that the vet did wrong here. This was just an unfortunate situation, communication issues, that kind of stuff, but nothing that vet did wrong. So I'm going to make a motion that this is dismissed with no violation.
Second.
And I just want to add for the record too, like given the thick coat of this dog, it's not to point blame necessarily at the owner. It is definitely very possible for that wound to have been there for a period of time without being noted. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of to put that out there, so if nobody's saying that, oh my gosh, this was here for a really long time before.
Right.
So just knowing that does happen. I've seen that plenty of times. So
sure. And also one of the problems she had was the wound was very small, and when he came back, the wound was very big. Well, that's normal.
Okay.
That's what you do in those cases.
Yeah.
You cut out all that dead tissue.
Right.
And that's what the vet did. So seemed to me that it was handled quite properly. The biggest problem I had with her refusal to obtain follow-up care when she was urged very strongly, if this dog isn't doing well, you need to have it seen, and she did not do that.
Right.
That was a big point for me, so I would agree that the respondent handled it totally appropriately.
And the dog passing away 5 days later was nothing.
We don't know.
It's hard to say why it passed away, what was going on.
We know there was comorbidities, right? We know it was.
Right, he was a big boy.
It was extremely obese. It was as obese as you can get, 9 out of 9.
Right.
Body condition score. Enlarged liver, distended bladder. I mean, they had to put a catheter in to get the urine out.
Something else going on.
There's definitely something else going on. You can tell from the pictures that the complainant provided that, that wound had been there a while. It wasn't just that the day before they brought it in, because the hair was already matted. Even though you couldn't see the wound, you could see that hair in that area it wasn't clean or something going on there.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 22-104. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Case 22-104 is dismissed. Okay, now on to case 22-105, regards to William Langhofer, DVM. Tracy, please read the summary.
Sure. Case 22-105, the complainant is Reese Wallace, the respondent is William Langhofer, DVM. On March 5th, 2022, Dior, a 11-month-old female Bernedoodle, was presented to respondent's premises for a spay procedure. When technical staff was transferring the dog from the main building to the surgical building, the dog became frightened, slipped out of the collar, slipped out of the collar that was provided by the pet owner and ran away. Technical staff and associate veterinarian Dr. Kirby were able to capture the dog and bring her safely back to the premises. The dog sustained injuries to her pads and nails during the chase. Dr. Kirby treated the dog, the spay was canceled, and the dog was discharged to the pet owner. The dog was presented on March 8th and March 11th for bandage changes. The committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We have no complainant. We have Mr. Stoll
monitoring.
And Dr. Mosley, you are the lead.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is something that has happened before in many clinics, and I think will happen again. While no clinic is immune to dog escapes, however, this situation was set up for this to happen. We're walking the dog from one building to another on a busy street with no physical barrier at all. And like I said, this was a, I would say this error is very egregious for this dog to get away, because like I said, it's very common for dogs to be walked outside of clinics for various reasons. And depending on the physical situation, the policy needs to be clear and enforced. I have a colleague who had a remodel of his hospital, and he had trailers where temporary trailers, so they had to walk the dogs between. They had to wear a band, a leather band with a hook on it around them, attached to the dog. So even if you had a 120-pound Rottweiler and dragging you down the street, the dog isn't going to get away. In my hospital, two slip leads on the wrist had to be monitored by somebody else, a supervisor, the first couple of times you took a dog out. So those things, and those, that didn't happen in this case. They had the owner's collar on there, and the dog slipped that. So they've taken steps now to correct this situation. However, I think, again, like the other case, this calls in the general training of this staff. Is it trained properly? Are the policies clear? Not only so this doesn't happen, but something else in that clinic. And so you tend to wonder about those type of things. If something this severe, if you will, happened. So because of that, I would recommend, I would make a motion for a letter of concern so that they understand that this policies, these procedures and policies need to be clear and enforced in all respects.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second to issue a letter of concern in this case. Any further discussion on it?
No, I would like to make a point because I do agree that this is a case where I think that would be appropriate. This is in Scottsdale. I have my business in Scottsdale too. I do know that the Scottsdale city codes limit a lot of things that veterinarians can do or animals in general can do. As far as I'm aware, last time I looked at the codes, we're not even allowed to have animals outside.
Really?
Which yes. is not feasible.
How can you?
Yeah. They Same also, much. Because of that, that's why you don't see boarding facilities in Scottsdale that have outside dog runs, because they just can't utilize them, noise ordinance and that kind of stuff. Again, unless this has changed. So that kind of gives me a little bit of pause. Like I said, I still think a letter of concern is good, but I mean, just we are set up, unfortunately, with the city codes for having problems there. Because even with my hospital, I can't put a fence around my yard because then that allows for animals to be there and they won't allow for that. So it's really kind of, we're tying our hands. We are being set up by certain city ordinances that do set us up for failure. So like I said, I think this is a problem. I'm glad that this worked out well. I do agree we have to have proper procedures, but it does give me a little bit of pause and say, okay, I think they were trying to do as best as they could, but still, slip leads are always better than client-provided stuff because they always slip down the client-provided leashes. Always.
Never on right.
Especially with
collars never on right.
No, they always do it.
You're like two fingers. They're like, that's too tight.
They just
no, it's
back
not.
Up. Yeah.
But I mean, I would like to make a point that they did have a slip leash policy. Mm-hmm. They just had to remind everybody of it. Right. I've definitely been in practices where we weren't allowed to have yards, but they had boarding, so these young teenagers would take these dogs out for walks, and I can't tell you how many dogs had gotten away, and this is exactly why I don't want to be in a facility running one that has a boarding, like that you have to go outside and walk them, because the risk is not worth it. And I think everybody probably is very thankful, including us here reading this case, that nothing serious happened to this dog, because again, I've seen really horrible things happen. So I think that they took this very seriously, I mean, at least from their response. So I think a letter of concern, yes, it does memorialize it, but they did have the procedure. Somebody was being lazy, maybe, right. and didn't take it seriously. Right. And I promise you, that person will never forget again. Exactly. When you lose a dog off of the end of a leash, your heart will stop, and especially on a busy road, the last thing you want to do is see that. So I think that where I agree, they did have things in place. You just have to make sure everybody seriously understands the risk.
Right, and therefore the letter of concern, are we doing these things?
Yes.
Training issue.
But Dr. Wright, I'm so glad you did mention that piece about, because I remember reading in there that they were trying for over a year or something to get a fence permit.
Yeah. Even more of a reason to say, hey staff, we've got a problem here.
Right, yeah.
Right.
It is very, very important that you follow these rules.
Yes. And even with
that, you put a tie line between the buildings and say, "Oh, you have to go across the tie line." So you have to do it.
But I mean, and they can slip out of slip leashes. They can come out of anything. You can lose it, right? Like you can have it wrapped around your arm. I've seen a 120 20-pound mm-hmm. Dane with an 80-pound teenager on the other end, they're not going to win. You know, they're going to go.
So, I had a St. Bernard at my hospital years ago that basically was in a kennel in the back in the run, in the very back of the hospital, and when my technician went in to open it, lunged at my technician. I don't want to use the word attack, but lunged at my technician, knocked her down. This is like almost a 140-pound dog. Pushed through every single door, pushed out the front door.
I've seen that too. They open every single door on the way out. I've watched it. Like, they get the push button.
That happened once.
Thank God we got it. Nothing happened. Yep. But I mean, things, no matter what you protect against, things can happen and accidents can happen. And yeah, this is, I think there were some failings here that should have been addressed, and it looks like they were addressed after the fact, and thank God everything worked out. But it's hard. Escapes are going to happen. And hopefully you have your insurance in place for that too.
Yeah.
Good discussion. So we have a motion and a second to issue a letter of concern in the case of 22-105. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. We'll send a letter of concern. Okay, next up we have 22-106. Words to Tiffany Riddle, DBS. Please note that Dr. Thompson is recused on this item. And Tracy, please read the summary.
Thank you. Case 22-106, complainant is Cindy Ashwell. The respondent is Tiffany Riddle, DBM. On March 4th, 2022, Duke, a 1-year-old, 10-month-old intact male Great Dane, was presented to respondent for an exam and rabies vaccine. According to complainant, respondent and her staff were unprofessional and did not properly handle their dog, causing the dog to require a muzzle. Complainant felt respondent entered inappropriate comments on the dog's medical record regarding their conduct. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you, Tracy. We have no complaint in here. We do have Mr. Stoll again.
Monitoring.
Okay. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead.
Oh, my. Wow. Okay. So, I love my dogs. I do. When you have a giant dog, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And unfortunately, in the veterinary setting, it's not their favorite place to go, right? Every time they go there, if they feel great, you're poking at them, prodding at them, you know, doing any sort of things. And a responsible pet owner does that, right? They bring them in for nail trims, they get blood draws, they get vaccines. It's not pleasant for them. And as they get bigger and bigger and bigger, or just as they grow up, obedience is a really necessary tool when it comes to presenting them to these strange situations, also socializing and everything else. This dog was presented as not well socialized, and muzzles are incredibly effective to prevent really significant injury to your team, and you cannot have a team that is significantly injured, especially the veterinarian. So where I think they were very concerned and very protective of their really giant, I'm sure, adorable baby, he had to be handled differently. And what they saw was probably a very different progression, because every other time he was fine, right? But they get bigger and bigger and bigger as the weeks go on, and then things become less and less manageable. And so, where I'm sorry that they felt that way, maybe a general practice would be better for them. But there are gonna be general practices that won't allow him to come back. And it's for the safety of their team. And they're professional, you know, because there aren't many of those right now. Veterinarians are, you know, hard to come by. And so this veterinarian was doing her job documenting the situation. And I think her recommendation was sound. And so where I'm sorry they felt that way, it was very fortunate nobody got hurt. And, you know, darn it. But this is excessive to do a complaint in this regard. Just don't go there. Yeah. Go somewhere else. You know, that's your right. So I make a motion to dismiss with no violations.
Second. Okay. A motion and a second to dismiss.
So I've got some discussion.
Yeah.
I agree with everything you just said, but what was totally inappropriate and unprofessional is to put that on the vaccine certificate.
On a rabies certificate, I agree.
It was on the rabies certificate.
Oh, okay.
In the medical record, totally appropriate. Firing those people, tell them to go somewhere else, totally appropriate.
That is their medical record, though. If you've seen Vetco's records, it's all in one form. So that's what we always get.
That's public information, that's not in the medical record, that's out in the public.
But the medical record is...
You have to hand that to your county.
Right, everybody sees that.
To get your license.
But that is their record, though, that's their form. Like, their form, so I've seen enough of their records. I've seen enough of their records to where that's what you get. The certificate is the written-up thing, is the documentation. I don't know if you, Dr. Nosley, or Dr. Wright have seen it.
Printed differently than her medical records than she submitted. What they submitted, their vaccine certificate...
That's all I've ever gotten, because...
Was printed totally different than what her record said, the same thing, but it was in a different format.
Right, so...
Certificate format.
So the thing is, like, trying to get records from Vetco is impossible, basically. So what you get from the client is the actual record. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all in one thing. So I don't know. I didn't see a problem with that.
So I
hear
so
you.
Maybe this is where you go against the premise instead of the individual veterinarian. But
maybe
that is totally wrong and unprofessional to put that on a public document where it's out there. I mean, it's like you walking around with that on your driver's license. Somebody doesn't like you, right? It has no business on your driver's license. It has no business on your rabies license. It belongs in the medical record.
Yeah, I think it's totally.
But it does not belong on the certificate at all.
And I do understand what you're saying there, but I think you're also correct. I don't think there would be a statute around how to define medical records and what's acceptable and what's not.
But the certificates are part of the medical record, though. I mean, it is the medical record.
Yeah.
So it's not.
We don't have HIPAA laws.
No, yeah. It's not actually. It's not technically separate. Now, some facilities, like with our electronic stuff, it's all in one thing. Some are like the tear offs, which is like Vetco uses that, right? Because I don't know if anybody's ever called Vetco for records. You can't, like, mm-hmm. good luck, right? That's mm-hmm. the person gets the whole thing. You know, they get this whole, like, tear off is like all the vaccines that were done, and it looks like the things that equine veterinarians use, right? Everything's all in one form. And so to me, I'm like, well, that's is what it is.
How hard is it to have two pages?
Yeah.
Well, but it's a huge corporate. Yeah, it's this huge corporate entity.
Okay, but it's definitely not best practice.
Is not a veterinary requirement, right?
What's that?
That certificate for the rabies vaccination is not. It's good medical practice to vaccinate.
County law.
It's county, state law, right?
Yeah.
So it's totally different from the medical record. That certificate is mm-hmm. totally different. Yes, it's part of the medical record, but you get that to take it to somebody else so you legally have this dog out in the public or this cat or whatever else you're vaccinating.
Well, cats
everything I do, though, goes through my medical record system, which makes it part of the medical record. So if I print up a certificate, it says a certificate was printed, so it's part of the medical record automatically. I'm not saying it's not part of the medical record.
But it's also not. Right? You don't give Maricopa County your medical record, right? You just give them the certificate that it was vaccinated. That's all they need. That's all they need to see is verified, signed by a veterinarian, that this dog was vaccinated for rabies. They don't want the medical record. And it shouldn't be there for anybody else to read other than the veterinarian and the people in the clinic and other veterinarians.
Okay, it opens it up to you can put anything on a rabies certificate. Mm-hmm.
This is all academic right now.
Is it a violation of the Veterinary Practice Act?
I understand that you don't agree with it, and I can definitely see that from the position, but I don't think we can comment on that. That's more of a let the legislator deal with that, and then we can interpret that.
Also, there.
But we just
is,
don't have
is,
that kind
is
of.
There a ter- is there the attorney monitoring?
It's unprofessional conduct.
Okay, thanks.
Is we have an attorney monitoring this one?
I don't know.
It's unprofessional.
Monitoring? Monitoring? Are you monitoring?
Monitoring.
Okay, so they have their attorney monitoring. They're going to hear this. He can provide them feedback. I mean, there's really no statute, but...
Unprofessional conduct. It's unprofessional to give that to Maricopa County.
That would be a hard one to defend, I would imagine, in court. That's pretty...
Okay, Mr. Harris, am I an idiot?
So let's... Or we'll let Mr. Harris...
You want to go beyond...
just monitoring. I know from working up this case, because I expressed those same concerns, and it's a self-generating record, certificate from the medical record. Because I made the same comment, that why would you put that in the certificate? And the response was, it wasn't put into the certificate, it's a self-generating certificate from the medical record.
So it's
but they recognized that that was not an ideal thing to put in, the message has been conveyed.
I mean, it generated the complaint, let's just put it that way. So now they have to deal with it.
Software issue, something they need.
So it's the software engineer.
And it is unprofessional to put it on the certificate.
Okay.
Medical record or not.
Thank you. So I think Dave has some good feedback to give his clients, and.
I mean, I need a motion, so.
What's that?
I know we have the motion.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
And a second.
So I'm gonna vote nay on the dismissal unless we do a letter of concern.
Okay, so the motion and the second is to dismiss case 22-106. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
And one nay, so the motion carries. Thank you.